Today, we're going to talk about art and entertainment that challenges the audience to pay close attention. Work that's so persuasive or fascinating or sometimes so mysterious that you wish you could jump into it. Of course, we never physically enter a film screen or a novel or a piece of music, but even when we stay where we are in the audience, we do become part of the arts that we love. We connect the dots and fill in the blanks and transport ourselves into the works in our own imaginations. My guest, as much as anybody else in American film, makes watching his movies an active process, and he's been doing it since long before interactive was a buzzword. Robert Altman is the director of some of my favorite films, among them MASH, The Long Goodbye, McCabe and Mrs. Miller, Nashville, The Player, and Gosford Park. His newest movie, The Company, opened on Christmas Day. Bob Altman, welcome to Studio 360.
Happy to be here, in every degree of it.
Your new movie, which I mentioned, The Company, is just a few days old now. Tell me about how it came to be and what it is.
Well, Neve Campbell, who stars in the film, had been a dancer in Canada with the Canadian Royal Ballet School and actually entrepreneured it. She started it, and she's one of the producers. She hired a friend of mine, Barbara Turner, who's a screenwriter, and to concoct this film about the ballet world.
And the film, as it exists, for those in our audience who haven't seen it, takes the actual Robert Joffrey Ballet Company and sort of fictionalizes a part of a season in their life.
Yeah, it really is a season in the life of, and it's not. There's no story really. There are shards of stories, but these are stories you know. But mainly it's just a look at these dancers from behind, from on top. I wanted to actually turn over the rocks and see if there were worms and maggots. What was there? That's sort of the way we did the film.
And when you say look on top, you obviously that goes figuratively as well as literally. You put the camera in lots of places other than in front of the stage.
We put the camera where audiences can't be. But it was really to show the I looked at this like it was a football team and we didn't care who won, or a basketball team, because these people are so courageous, these dancers. I mean, they're phenomenal. I'm afraid doing this film has really hampered my career in the future, because I get a script now and I think, oh, no, what are all these words? What is everybody talking about? It's always the same thing.
Because in this film, there are long stretches simply of dance.
Yeah, well, there's the only reason we put words, we let the dancers and actors use words is that we didn't want the people to think they were mad if they didn't talk. So,
were you going in as a relative novice in the dance world, having spent all the time in this world making this film, did you come out surprised by either the lives of the dancers or what dance is all about?
Well, I have an opinion. I wasn't in it all that. I know more, of course, than I did going in. But mainly I came out of it with sort of a melancholy for these people. These girls particularly start when they're 6 years old, and by the time they're 17 or 18, their bodies have changed. I can spot them walking down the street. They walk like a duck. Their feet turn out.
Very beautiful ducks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No question about it. But they're definitely changed. And by the time, they're in their 20s, they look around and they see what is really the ballet world is and what the competition is. And they can say, I'm never going to be Gelsey Kirkland. I'm never going to be Susan Farrell. But I can't quit. I've spent my whole life changing my body even, changing all of my social habits, all my instincts. I mean, it's very, very demanding. And the chances of big success are too, slim and none.
Well, and in the film, the star, played by Neve Campbell, who is having a big success, is still working as a waitress every night, which is reflects reality, does it not?
That's right, absolutely.
Right now, I'd like to play a scene from The Company. In it, we'll hear an actual ballet choreographer who plays himself in your film, Robert de Rossier, pitching an elaborate production of his actual ballet, Blue Snake, to the fictional ballet director played in the movie by Malcolm McDowell.
All right, so we start with the giant snake on stage. It's just floating, glowing blue in a void of black.
How many dancers?
There's about 20 dancers. So we don't see them, but to make it really smooth.
Can we do it with 10?
No, we couldn't do it.
Could we cut the tail off?
Maybe, yeah. And then from the snake flowing like that, the black curtain goes up and it reveals the blue snake at the back, and it has the Shiva characters of the cosmic dancer, the storyteller.
Wow. What's the ballet called?
Blue Snake.
Yes, Blue Snake, the snake representing the spine and the blues, the Shakti, the energy in the spine.
Robert, I don't think you understand our financial situation here. I mean, I'm working with mirrors as it is.
I can tell you one thing. This piece will be fantastic on this company.
I believe you. I mean, that's why you're here.
Thank you.
You know, you are a genius. I'm never wrong about these things, am I?
He never appears to be.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Go and... Robert.
Yes?
Three things to remember. Budget, budget, budget.
A clip from Robert Altman's new film, The Company. Bob, it's a funny scene, and here it involves this actual choreographer talking about his actual ballet, which you show in the film. Your films have often had that kind of interesting intertwined relationship with reality. I think, of course, of Tanner 88, which was your great television program you created with Gary Trudeau that incorporated Bob Dole and Pat Robertson and other political figures of the time into a story of a fictional presidential candidacy. Does that, as a way of working, appeal to you, sort of that interesting intersection of reality and fiction?
Well, that was in 88 when we did Tanner. That was the first time I'd done that sort of thing. In Prêt-à-Porter, that was shot around and with mostly all the real designers and models.
Your film about fashion.
About fashion. And I just got used to that. The thing with Trudeau, the Tanner 88, was probably the most creative thing I've ever been involved in. I mean, we stepped out and crossed between fiction. We took a fictional character and ran him for president.
Let's listen to a little bit of Tanner 88.
You're tearing them up in my home state.
Well, what? Michigan is a strong one for me. You know that, Jack.
I'll tell you, it made me glad to be a Democrat. I wouldn't want to be up against you.
Well, the Republicans are going to be tough this year, but we wish you the best.
Looking tougher all the time. Congratulations.
Thank you, Jack.
Pat, care yourself.
What about this term Christian hardball we keep hearing?
Well, I don't know
they
about Christian hardball,
at their heads.
But this is playing all... I used to be a boxer in the Golden Gloves and a heavyweight wrestler, and so I'm not afraid of a political hardball. I just don't want anybody to play dirty. That's
you're
all.
Playing for keeps.
Playing for keeps, and we're playing serious, but not dirty.
All right.
That was Robert Altman's Tanner 88. It was very interestingly ahead of its time, given that it came before not only all news networks, but so many things it was seems prescient in the 15 years hindsight about.
Well, I hope it plays back that way. I mean, it's going to be an interesting year, but with the election... It's as au courant as anything else that's going on, and by the way, that show 15 years later now is going to be rerun next year
on the Sundance Channel.
And we just we're doing promos. We just shot some promos for it, and I'm really excited about that.
One of the pieces of conventional wisdom about Robert Altman's technique is your technique of overlapping dialogue. And before we talk a little bit about that, I want to play a bit of Gosford Park to illustrate for audiences what we're talking about.
I must say, your guests sleep in much more comfortable beds than your servants.
What did Isabel give to you then?
Tell me.
Dear, would it be possible to play something a little more cheerful? We're all quite emotional enough as it is.
That was Gosford Park. Where did that way of handling dialogue come from? How did that start with you?
Well, in the first place, I have received a lot of credit for inventing overlapping dialogue, which simply isn't true. You look at Howard Hawks' films of the 30s, and the first film that I saw, I remember seeing, that really played that was a thing called The Thing. That Howard Hawks had produced. It was about a science fiction piece. But I remember seeing that in a theater in New York, and I thought, wow, all those people are talking at the same time. That's the way it should be.
Because it seems more real?
Yeah. And we don't have to hear every word. Now, I did a film many years after that. It was one of my first films, a thing called Countdown. I did it at Warner Brothers. And Jack Warner was gone in Europe the whole time the film was being shot. And so I shot this in the way I think things should be done. Jack Warner came back on the last day of shooting, came on the set, and I was not there. I was in the loo. And I came back and he said, well, Warner's back. He's on your set and he's going to look at a lot of your dailies tonight. And it was our last day. And we wrapped and got properly drunk or something, and I went home. And Sunday morning, I got a call, or Sunday evening, from somebody at the studio, and they said, don't bother to come in Monday because they're not going to let you in the gate. I said, what do you mean? He says, Jack Warner called your dailies up and saw these, and he said, that fool has actors talking at the same time. And I went to the studio, and they had a cardboard box with the stuff from my desk, and they handed it.
And your career was over as a film director.
There. It was there.
If the overlapping dialogue is more like we experience real life, it nevertheless, as a film's entertainment, requires audiences to listen a little more closely, work a little harder than they do when every line is presented to them one at a time, doesn't it?
I think I try in all of my films to put the audience on notice very early that you better pay attention or you're going to miss it. And most of them miss it. No film of mine, if you say, oh, I saw that, you haven't got that film. You have to see it twice. Because the first time through, you're playing a guessing game. You're saying, oh, I know. Oh, my God, she's going to kill him. She didn't kill him. Oh, she's doing this. And you're playing that guessing game. The second time through, once you know who done it, then you can sit and kind of look in the corners and start to get the nuances and the details, which are what make that particular expression unique.
And what is referred to and has been referred to for the last 20 years or so in Hollywood as the high concept film is almost making the absence of that close paying attention part of the way filmmaking is done. And I'm reminded of the way in which at the beginning of The Player, your film, you so mercilessly and perfectly satirize that idea in Hollywood. And we're going to play a little bit of The Player to remind our audience what I'm talking about.
What's your pitch?
This is the best. Well, is political scary?
Political doesn't scare me. Radical political scares me. Political scares me.
Politely politically radical. But
is it funny?
It's funny.
It's funny. A funny political thing.
It's a funny, and it's a thriller, too.
It's a thriller.
And it's all at once.
So what's the story?
Well, I want Bruce Willis. Mm-hmm. I think I can talk to him. It's a story about a senator, a bad guy senator at first. And he's traveling around the country on the country's dime, you know, like that Sununu guy used to.
I see. So there's sort of a cynical political thriller comedy.
Yeah, but it's got a heart in the right spot. Uh-huh. And anyway, he has an accident. And he becomes clairvoyant, like a psychic.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a psychic political thriller comedy with a heart.
With a heart. And not unlike Ghost meets Manchurian Candidate.
Go on, I'm listening.
Anyway, he can start to read people's minds, and when he gets to the president's mind, it's completely blank. Completely blank.
If I could do anything.
I'd like a beer, please.
That was Robert Altman's The Player. And, of course, although I find that entire movie and that sequence hilarious, that could be a documentary.
Oh, very, very clearly. You know, that voice that you heard the most there was Alan Rudolph, who is a film director, not an actor. And that was the end of a 10-minute opening sequence. And we'd set this shot up to run full 10 minutes.
So you're traveling around the film studio hearing all these pitches.
And so it had to, if there was anything went wrong at any time, we had to do it again. And then we had it rehearsed and set up and ready to go. And I thought, my God, I've put Alan Rudolph, who is not an actor, in the anchor position. So if we could get through 9 minutes, 9.5 minutes of this, it could be perfect. And now it's up to Alan. And I thought, what have I done? But he handled it pretty well.